All right, everyone, welcome to the RSP Cast. We have episode number 33, I believe. And today joining me is the one and only Betts. Betts is better known on Twitter as All22. That's where you can find him. And he really does some fantastic work on there talking about really, you know, different offensive and defensive concepts, X's and O's strategy. And he's someone that has really dug into just learning about scheme when it comes to the game. And, you know, and if you get to know, you know, what I like too is that everyone has like different personalities on Twitter. So, you know, one of the things that I enjoy about Betts is Betts has a good sense of humor about himself as well as other folks on Twitter. And you can kind of, you know, it's like my buddy Eric Stoner in a sense when he used to be on Twitter in that sense, is that, you know, him and maybe Justice Mosqueda and Charles McDonald, you know, there's a level of he takes his work seriously and what he does, but at the same time, he doesn't take himself too seriously. And I think that, you know, he does the same with other people on here, and it's a fun perspective. So Betts, for that long ass welcome. You know, appreciate you coming
Matt,
on the show
thanks
today.
For having me on.
So how did you get into all this? Why are you so interested in the subject matter that
well,
you are?
Back when Grantland was up, Crispy Brown, he was doing his like 101 series where he was breaking down like power football, what power football means, what a zone running scheme was. And this was back in 2013, and I had no interest in football, but I read Grantland every day, and that's kind of what got me into it. And then, you know, I went to his Twitter account and just followed every single person he had on there just to see what he was seeing, kind of like, and I did nothing with it. I just kind of followed for fun for probably 3 years. I, you know, followed Stoner, Justice, Parsons, you know, all those, all the OG guys, and kind of got into the draft stuff, but it just wasn't appealing to me, I guess. It was like, was this guy good or is he not good? That's basically that's what it broke down to, you know, and it was a lot of time and I just wasn't interested in it. And then I got into like the history of football, right? Like, what an air raid offense was, what the run and shoot was, and that's what really caught my eye. And actually, like, Patrick Mahomes is really what I wanted to understand, the offense behind what he was doing. And so I just, like, engulfed myself in the air raid offense, and then that's just what started, like, okay, if this happens, then what next, you know? And then that just got me going. That was what, probably 2016. So,
yeah, that's great. So let's talk a little about the air raid, because, you know, you hear that the simplistic version of this is that it's kind of like a very watered down version of the West Coast at its roots in certain respects. But what does that really mean? And how accurate really is that? I mean, what have you learned about the air raid offense that sets it apart and its origins
well,
as well?
How Mummy, he wanted to be different. He needed to be different. And he actually went to BYU. And BYU was back then, they were setting records back in like 1984, right? And he basically, Mummy tried to steal all their plays. He was like, okay, you know, they're breaking records. What can I do to like steal? And that BYU offense was based off the West Coast offense. And Andy Reid, I think, was actually on that BYU team back then. And, you know, he was like, how can I teach this to high school kids? And it really is based off the West Coast offense, right? It's you're stretching the field as vertically as possible with some downfield options. And you're keeping it pretty easy passes, right? We're not throwing post 25-yard posts every time. We're looking for the 5-yard sticks, you know, hit the running back in space. It's all about just stretching the defense as far as you can. So, I mean, it really is simplistic. I actually went back and I charted every single play from 2017, and they ran I think it was 14 passing plays the entire season. But it's all about having answers. Wow. And that offense has answers for every defense that's presented, right? You only have five basic coverage structures. And so you really don't have to be that complicated to be successful.
So what do they do to, you know, to have those answers or to make defenses go, I think it's one thing, but it's going to be something
Everything
else.
Looks the same, right? They motion into a set, and based off that set, they can run Y-stick or they can run 95, which is a Y-cross. And it looks similar, but it just works. You know, you're always stressing. I guess with Leach, he's always stressing certain defenders. I talked about this a couple days ago, but we're not always attacking defensive structure, but sometimes you're just attacking players. So you have to keep that in mind when you're, okay. I mean, we want to attack linebackers, right? They don't want to be in coverage. So we're going to make linebackers run. I mean, that's basically the whole philosophy of the offense. We're not really challenging corners 25 yards down the field, right? We want to conflict the flat defender who may not be comfortable covering, you know, that 8 yard span of turf. So.
Right. Or to put them in a bind where the linebacker ends up on a bullet route that goes right up the seam for 20 yards and he's chasing from
behind.
Well, you
throw a little couple swing routes, right? And then you just give him a Texas and then all of a sudden that's a 20 yard gain. It's just small adjustments like that that can create explosive plays.
So why do you think the NFL didn't think this was going to work?
You know, I feel like if you're in the NFL, you stay in the NFL. You know, you kind of like get brought up through that system. It's kind of like being raised by your parents, right? Like you kind of pick up their ideals or whatever, and you're not really asked to be innovative at all. And in college, these guys are coming from like high schools. They got to innovate. They have to make like, they may have one good player on their entire team. They have to figure out a way where how am I going to win games? And I just don't think that type of thinking is in the NFL. In the NFL, I think maybe they think this is how it worked before. Maybe it'll work. I don't know, but it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's an old, it's got that kind of old boys network thing going on. And it's true because you think about, I mean, even on the high school level, a good example is the, you know, Dub Maddox, the co-author of R4, which is a system, any of you aren't familiar with, you know, it's a terrific system because it's kind of like a template that goes over any type of offense that helps you as a quarterback and receivers read the defense and understand in a quick thinking kind of way how to prioritize your reads and to see pre-snap and post-snap what to do. And it's just fantastic. And he speaks all over the country and does all these clinics. And he did this because his quarterback, essentially in a game, who was this good veteran in a big game, was like, I don't know what I'm seeing out there. And he was trying to figure out how to make him see that. And then it turned out that one of his quarterbacks got hurt and he had like a freshman playing, and the freshman just like tore it up because he had gotten a knack for this system that he was installing over this whole R4 system. So the thing about Dub Maddox, which is interesting, is from what I was told when I was introduced to his work, I was told by someone who has worked with a number of colleges, is that Dub Maddox should be a college coach by now. The problem is that no one wants to hire him as an offensive coordinator because all the coaches who do know that they could be out the door within a couple of years and it would be Maddox replacing them. So you kind of get that understanding of what the dynamic is about of keep your job, and keep your job creates this political thing that's just kind of nasty and it inhibits innovation. So,
well, I mean, Justin says that every time. Coaches don't necessarily get paid to win games. So sometimes their decisions are to keep their job. I mean, it's human nature, but yeah, you get that a lot. I think that's one of the reasons, you know, Gus Malzahn, he stepped straight from a high school head coaching job into a college one, and it's probably
turns things upside down.
The same reason Dub Maddox, you know, like people don't want to hire him because they'll be out in a few years. So it's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because of the fact that we're seeing more of air raid offensive concepts in the NFL. We're seeing more option coming back to the NFL. And those are fun things. And they're very productive things that are working out. But I mean, like, let me ask you a question. I mean, have you watched the Panthers at all lately, the Carolina Panthers, and you know, Norv Turner, as we know, is the kind of coach that my contention always been is that the reason he left Minnesota was essentially Mike Zimmer said, we want you to change for Sam Bradford's strengths. And he said, I'd rather take my ball and go home, you know, and because I know I'm going to get my job somewhere else because I'm essentially tenured here. People know me, and owners are going to say, get us Norv Turner. He's proven he's won a championship, you know, as opposed to get me an innovative guy who's actually had success in, you know, over the years in recent times. So I've seen some things where Norv Turner does some option work in the red zone, and they have all these weapons like Curtis Samuel, who can kind of do a couple of different things and be a good, effective guy in an option look. You've got DJ Moore, who's essentially a running back in the open field. And then along with McCaffrey, who, you know, people say might have been the best route runner in the draft class last year, period. So I see flashes of them doing stuff, you know, that seems like it would be in the times of what's been working in the NFL, but not enough of it. So could you tell me, you know, what you would love to see them do with these types of weapons, or am I off base with what I'm thinking?
No, and too, I think Norv is old school, right? And a lot of the old school thinking comes from, I mean, they are running a ton of formations, like individual plays that attack certain things, and everything's game planned for. And I think that's a wrong line of thinking, because when you look at, like, you know, the Rams right now, and going back to like high school football, the wing T stuff, Justice wrote recently, under center, they've thrown like 90 something percent of passes off play action. This is something, you know, wing T coaches have been doing for 20 something years. And the reason they do it is because everything fits into a system. Everything looks the same, right? NFL coaches kind of, they want everything to look different, but that's hard on your players, right? You have a different assignment and you can't really, like, you're not giving the defense different looks. And I think that is the wrong line of thinking as well. You got to make everything look the same, and then you have counters off counters off counters. It doesn't have to be complicated. You just have to make people wrong.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's something that I've been reading from, like, Fergus Conley's book Game Changer, which is, you know, the thing about football that's difficult in terms of how they do play calling and scheming is that it's not fluid enough. It doesn't adjust enough in terms of what we have going on. So it's a situation where, you know, you look at basketball or, you know, soccer, and you see a lot more fluid play, and there are simpler concepts, but everyone's worked well enough together that they develop a trust and a rapport and ability to read certain things and just make minor adjustments that, like you said, will make someone wrong at the right moment. And it just seems like that it would be nice to see the NFL move to more of that. And Sean McVay sounds like a great example, as you just said.
Well, and I've actually been talking to one of the Panthers fans about basketball and football a lot, because I mean, the parallels are there. It's the same game. It's just fewer players. And like you said, it's more fluid, and there's something there. I just don't know enough about basketball yet to fully put it into like thoughts. But like, for me, route running is all about basketball. It's just,
yeah,
I wish I had like a better understanding of basketball so I can get, but I think there's something, or soccer even, right? Like the way they move off the ball. I mean, that's run and shoot football, right? Like, and two, there's just so many things that parallel. It's, I think you get stuck in football, 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 but there's stuff outside we can look for inspiration, right? I mean, run and shoot football was based off Tiger Ellison looking at kids being like, wow, these kids play good, like when they're allowed to do what they want to do. And it's crazy to me, like run and shoot football died in the 90s, but it was so progressive because of one failure. So it's just because people are paid, you know, to win. And it's crazy.
It's kind of like, it's kind of like who killed the electric car type of stuff, you know, when you think of it in that realm. It, so what made the run and shoot so progressive for fans who are listening to this who don't know the first thing about it?
Well, I mean, the run and shoot came about, Mouse Davis brought it back, and I was actually watching some USFL games here recently, but I mean, it was a four wide system back in the day, and every route has an adjustment on it so that you were always right. And a lot of, I mean, most of the route adjustments now are based off run and shoot football, right? You have middle of the field open, middle of the field closed, and you want to make that defender wrong. Well, that's based off run and shoot football from the, you know, 80s. And so, I mean, they were still running the ball 50% of the time, and they're still passing the ball 50% of the time. But it was how they were getting the ball downfield and the route adjustments that made it so progressive. The death of the run and shoot was the pass protection. But I think at this point we can figure that out and bring it back. But nobody, I mean, Hawaii right now is the only team willing to bring it back, and they're doing pretty good. But
but they're never going to recruit what, you know, what they could recruit at Oklahoma or exactly, Texas or Ohio State. So, yeah, but that's interesting. So how are you, how do you go about learning what you're learning? You know, just like if you were going to, you know, for me, for example, you know, I'm, you know, I've talked about this on a previous show with Rich Bartel, the quarterback coach. You know, I came into this, I understood a system of how to evaluate talent that had nothing to do with football. And I just thought, let me figure out a way to apply this to football because I'm interested in this whole draft process. Not really the draft, more the evaluation process. Like, I could care less about guessing where someone's going to get drafted. I mean, like, to me, that's just like, I'm not a GM. I don't care. I just want to know, like, why is this guy talented? What makes this guy tick? And can I project it with some reasonable ability in terms of barring the major iceberg stuff beneath that is a huge thing, like Chad Kelly, for instance, you know, you know what happened to him today. It's such a shame because as my buddy Daniel Simpkins at Football Guys mentioned, who's a licensed therapist, he's like, if that's not like a self-destruction situation, you know, right there, like days before you're likely to get a shot to be a starter, and you're going to do what you did. I mean, that's a big cry for help. So we don't know what really is happened and what's going to go on there, but barring those types of things, you know, it's fun to look at somebody and go, for me at least, you know, I mean, I understand if you're like, well, he's good or he's not good. You know, for me, it's more shades of that. But now that I've kind of done that for about 15 years, I'm getting, for the past few years, I've been slowly getting to drawing up plays and understanding how these plays work more, because I understand that that's going to make my scouting better. If I understand what a running back's conceptually looking at or a quarterback is thinking about from that standpoint, as opposed to just, you know, physical, technical, conceptual in kind of more of a box. Like I've kind of gotten to it backwards, you know, where it's like, maybe you look at a play and you say, the key is reading the safety and whether the field's closed or open or if the safety's leverage is here. I started looking at it that way and then kind of fanning out from the opposite direction. But how did you go about learning what you know, and what would you recommend to someone like me to just like get better at it?
to start off with how to get better at it, really my favorite way to learn is through cut-ups. You know, you see the same play over and over again, and you can kind of, without like watching a clinic or having someone explain it to you, you can see the rules, right? So I'm on a big kick right now to see like what wide zone is, like how to run wide zone. And just to be able to go through clips and clips and clips of it, you can see like why they were in this formation to run it, who are they attacking, all that, and that helps so much. The only issue is, especially when you start out, you have no idea how to get cut-ups. You don't know how to make them. You don't know what to look for. And so that is why when I started out, I wanted to do it right. And so I went out to coaching forums and I said, you know, how do coaches look in game plan? And, you know, they have spreadsheets where they game plan for opponents. So I took one of those spreadsheets and I just started running through games and trying to see, can I, you know, they're on this hash. What did they run? You know, and I pull up a website that has different route concepts. And I start out and say, like, this is this route concept on, you know, to the field. And this is this route concept to the boundary. And, okay, the defense is, you know, what's their structure? Are they one high, two high? Are they nickel, base? Just, and it's very tedious. Like, it is absolutely insane to go through. I mean, it takes 6 to 8 hours to get through, you know, one game. But I just feel like you're forcing yourself to look at every aspect, every single play. And although it took longer for me to learn that way, in the long run, I felt like that was the best way to go about it. I could look at clips and break down stuff, but then I had to ask myself, okay, they ran this earlier. Why did they run it again? You know, and just little things like that truly helped me figure out, you know, the scheme behind everything. I mean, it takes a while. Like, I'm still learning new things every single day because there's just so much strat. I mean, there's 11 players. They all have dual responsibilities and all this stuff, but it's great. I love it.
It makes me laugh because I follow you a lot on, I have my Twitter account and it's basically on TweetDeck, and I have like all these different columns and I only look at like one column and it's like, I have it on a slow crawl. It's like a tortoise crawl of people, but you're on that list because I enjoy your commentary and I also enjoy seeing what you're asking other people about or what you're working on and showing, because it's just cool to see that progression of the things that you're doing. So, you know, you're looking at wide zone, you know, I kind of like egging on the analytics people about, you know, running backs don't matter. And I certainly understand that, you know, and for anybody who's out there, listen, I understand that running backs matter less. I totally get that. I totally get that in the draft that there, you know, there's a talent glut at the position. If you ask me, people say that they don't matter as much. And I think they have a little backwards. Like, my point is that there's so much talent at that position still, as we're cycling through, that really you don't, well, it's kind of twofold. There's so much talent in certain aspects of the position that you know, in terms of running the football, there's a lot of talent. You know, in terms of blocking and receiving, not as much. In terms of being able to, you know, do it all at once and maybe even carry the load a little bit more, even less, you know, but I get the fact that because of the rules and because of everything that's changed, that they aren't as valuable. Okay. Now I'm going to be a smart aleck on Twitter and say, you know, show a run of Adrian Peterson going through five guys and go, yeah, it doesn't matter. Right. You know, but I know that's not what it's about. Okay. I promise. But the thing is that I do find the title a little bit provocative and over the top to say running backs don't matter. And I get why, you know, it gets people's attention. But what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, you have to look at it too. I always go back to high school. That's where everything's happening, right? Everything trickles from high school on up, and all coaches are going to put their best athlete at running back. I mean, that's why you have all that talent, right? So, and they just go through, you know, and then once they get to the league, they get paid like peanuts, and it's shitty, but yeah, and I mean, I'm a huge Mike Leach stan, and he doesn't, I mean, he uses his running backs like wide receivers too, and like you said, it's fun to egg on the analytics people because, I mean, they are a little insecure about, you know, like, it's easy to rile them up a little bit. It's great stuff. You know, it's great content, you know, but.
They're trying to establish a foothold in what they do, and I get that, and there's a lot of things with that, but they're, you know, it can get a little aggressive at times with the, you know, with the point, I think. And it's that deal where you look at it and say, listen, some running backs really, truly, you know, they impact games, you know, and to show, to sit there and show, like, I think there's a guy in your area, I think his name's Ben Baldwin, who I saw today and I laughed because he showed clip after clip of Todd Gurley, like, running through wide open lanes and, like, making some funny and great, you know, sarcastic commentary about all of that. But, you know, I could probably show twice as many plays of Todd Gurley doing things that few other backs could do from college and NFL tape that carries over to both, and just not even, and just say, I'll just leave it here without a comment as a response. And we'd be going back and forth all day be silly.
I mean, I look at that Rams offense. I'm really interested in it right now. And I'm not a huge Jared Goff fan. I think he's good. I do.
Right.
But, I mean, having Todd Gurley with the ability to do everything he does, like, if they, you know, when Malcolm Brown gets in there, that offense changes. They do a lot of different things when Gurley isn't in there. And,
like what?
Like Gurley, great wide zone runner. He's making some crazy reads sometimes, right? Wide zone, it's an outside play. You're usually reading the end man line of scrimmage, probably like the five or the seven tech. Based off, you know, how he lines up, you kind of have a pre-snap read of, am I going to bounce this? Or am I going to hit inside and read the three tech? And there's some plays where, you know, if they run it to the strong side, that their right tackle isn't as great as Whitworth. So he kind of gets blown up sometimes, and he has to immediately move his read to the three tech. And sometimes, you know, people talk about cutbacks, but that's, you have to get through three reads before you get to a cutback. And there is maybe, you know, there's probably five running backs who are probably, yeah, and
who can do that?
Like Zeke Gurley, probably David Johnson, but there isn't many people who are going to hit that hole. I mean, you could put a screenshot of like that wide open hole, but I'm like, Derrick Henry is not going to hit that backside hole on that wide zone play. And it's just difficult, you know.
You explained it well, because the fact there are so many people who don't understand that he's literally making three reads, and those reads have to be aligned with his footwork, and that his footwork has to respond to all of that, and that he has to be able to adjust on the fly. And some of these adjustments, they're not as instinctual or as instinctive
too,
as you think.
It's just, it really is incredible once you understand conceptually, like, the play. It's just, information isn't readily available for people really to get into too, which is a lot of coaches' faults. Like, they like to keep everything, you know, close to them. And I've been lucky enough to where I got into a couple coaching circles and they kind of share everything with me. So I am at a huge advantage, like, you know, to the average person to get this information. But
yeah
to say running backs don't matter. I mean, I see the analytics, like the EPA estimated points per attempt, and I see that, but there's also something in making everything look the same, right? If you make every run look like a pass, every pass look like a run, it's, you know, you need the whole piece of the puzzle. So,
yeah. And yeah, because there's some hindsight bias with all of this. And you know, you still also have to look at how these runners are being used and some of the better runners. You could still argue that, you know, Saquon Barkley's EPA would probably be pretty darn good, you know, at this point too. But it's like the point that you're making in terms of the decision making, because today we had, you know, I had a fun conversation with Mike Renner at PFF on Twitter this morning, because, you know, he had said, you know, he kind of had a comment about running backs, that what's lost in this debate is that, you know, they only have to be big, fast, and agile, you know, and it was kind of like, you're kind of confusing traits with athletic ability, and you're also diminishing, you know, unintentionally diminishing the value of what decision-making matrices go into this, as well as, or matrices, if I remember my English, and all, as well as, you know, footwork and how all that bleeds into it. And it's kind of like, you know, I use a lot of the musician stuff because that's where I came from in that level. But it's like, you know, they don't realize how many licks, like, it takes for a running back to learn and combine and use in various different ways over a harmony to actually, and learn all these different harmonies, like these, you know, it's like learning blues or rhythm changes or, you know, different types of standard changes that are in like song after song after song. You have to learn all that, and then it has to become second nature along with all of that technique you're learning. It's so akin to improvisational music that running back play, because it's the same thing. Your footworks, your licks, you know, and your phrasing and all of that comes into, you know, how you work with blockers, and what they're doing is setting the harmony, and you're playing over that, you know, and you're going to have to make adjustments, because if somebody's supposed to play a certain chord and they play the wrong note, or they change it and alter it due to the circumstance, you've got to have the ear or the eyes to be able to, you know, in the case for the running back, to follow that. And they're able to, you know, and so to me, it's so much more complex. It just looks easy. They make it look easy by comparison to what it really is.
I see where these guys are coming from, because on a run play, you need 6, 7, 8 people to work in harmony. Like you said, you need everybody to be on the same page. And if one thing breaks down, yeah, and then it ruins the run play. In passing, like, we saw Patrick Mahomes throw a left-handed pass for like 12 yards or whatever. So I see where that comes from too, because it is easier to throw, you know, the 2-yard hitch or whatever than it is to block up power for 2 yards. But I mean, they work in harmony. Yeah, they work together, but it's tough for people to admit, you know, you have to be one side or the other. You can't be.
Yeah. And it's funny, because it's like, here's the thing, like, as someone who, I'm sure people think, oh, I'm firmly on the film watching side, which isn't really the case, but it's like that I understand, as someone who is from a data perspective, can come from this. And if they're not watching the game, you know, or watching it that closely, or in some cases I've heard, don't watch the game because they feel like it will create issues. On that side, I think, while I appreciate someone wanting to thinking on that level, it's also creating a chance where they're eliminating themselves the ability to understand context within their data, which is going to become very important as they get deeper into this. But at the same time, you know, I can see someone come from this from a perspective and say, you know, your eyes fail you, your intuition fails you, then the data will give you insights that you would be covered by with biases from your eyes. And I get that. So coming through from that perspective, I can understand that you come across some sort of, like, you know, realization about something, and you're excited about it. You want to share it. It's also kind of, and it's different than what you've seen elsewhere. And it also looks right from the data, you know? So you're going to come from that perspective, and you may have a hole there, because you may have a hole of, in terms of understanding the context of the game and how that all works together and the variables with it. And if you haven't taken time to learn about the positions and learn about what their skills are and learn about that stuff, to someone like me who spent 15 years like putting together how a running back does this stuff, and like you asking running backs how they learn this stuff, is it just instinctive? And they're like, heck no. I'm like working on footwork all the time. I'm working on these different types of things. So to hear someone say something like today, you know, my first thought is, I want to mess something up, you know? I mean, like, I want to mess somebody up when I hear that. You know, I want to break stuff, you know? I get, you know, that's my visceral reaction. My mature reaction is, those are nice guys. They're doing their, you know, they're doing their thing. I take it more personally because in the scheme of things, who cares about any of this? I mean, there's like far more important things, you know? But at the same time, you know, when you invest, just like they're invested in that, people who are invested in the opposite or coming from it from an opposite perspective, you find that you actually have a lot more in common, or that you, there's some meeting points there that are valuable. You just have to kind of get over yourself of what you're emotionally invested in to have the conversation.
Well, I mean, this offseason, I was really, I didn't use data at all, and found some of these analytic guys, and they did some really great studies, like on the goal line, right? You would think, on the goal line, you want to run zone because you don't want to pull a lineman and be a gap short. But actually, power runs at the goal line were far more successful than any zone run. And I had to go back and see why. Huh. Well, on the goal line, you just tighten your split and then you gain a gap play side because you're pulling somebody backside. And then you get the defense can't tee off vertically, right? They have to move horizontally now. And so that is something that I took with, I was like, wow, like I would have used my previous knowledge of gaps and all this stuff, but they really opened my eyes to some new things. And so I'm like really,
that's a great point.
Like what these guys do to like, you know, I have huge holes that maybe they can help fill, you know, and I can just be more knowledgeable. And yeah, I mean, we need to get like a middle ground, but for now it's pretty much like two sides. And
our political stuff going on right now in our country. It's kind of like that right now. It's like, you know, we're all the reasonable people, you know, and on either side. And it's like, you know, I know I've egged some folks on, but I hope that they understand, because there's a number of people I've talked with publicly on Twitter where I hope we both all realize that it's all cool and we can have the conversation. But it's like, that's the sad part, is that we're kind of splintered off that way. But you make a great point about it. I had no idea about that. And that's a fantastic insight.
Yeah. And, you know,
so.
Yeah, we all have something to learn from each other. So it's good stuff. It's a great website some of the time.
Yeah. So tell me about what are your thoughts on scouting in general from coming at from this perspective? Because we do come from it from opposite perspectives in terms of how we're going about learning. What is it that you're... What are insights or thoughts or just like reactions you've had to like scouting players now that you're learning?
Well, I know we were both big fans of Jordan Wilkins. And one of the big reasons, like I was just watching for scheme and I saw him run counter, and counter is like a B, C type run. And he was hitting the backside A gap on counter versus LSU because the linebackers were fast flowing to fill those extra gaps play side, and they vacated, you know, backside. And you don't see, that's super rare to see. I've seen it maybe once or twice since I've been watching football, and he just did it three or four times in a game. And it's just little things like that where, I mean, you may be watching, you're like, wow, like that's a great cut, you know, but why is it a great cut? Like he's next level on his, you know, reading and reacting. And I will say, like, for offensive players, the scheme stuff is good, but talent, like, overweighs a lot of the unless it's quarterback play or whatever, like, I feel like you can rely more on like your scouting, like your, how their hips are or whatever. But defense specifically, I've seen it help me a ton to see like who is actually good and who isn't, because a lot of defenders have dual responsibilities, right? I said this before. You have a run gap usually, and you know, what's it called? Sorry, spot drop. Like you have a hook or a curl flat, or and learning. So one of the big reasons I was a fan of that Boise State linebacker, I forget his name, Vander Loosh, or
who's he?
Yeah, 33, Vander Esch. I think his number was.
Yeah.
But
Leighton Vander Esch. He was doing. Well, good. Now I can get a picture of him because this is episode 33. So we'll put that on this podcast.
But understanding like the defensive structure, and I could see like, okay, the offense aligns in a trips formation, right? And so you have a base coverage usually. You're always in cover one, right? Man to man, cover two, cover three, cover four, or cover 5-2. And then based off what formation they come out in, right, you have a check. So if it's in bunch, you need an answer to bunch, because you'll just get shredded if you stay in your base defense, because the offensive has aligned, you know, four receivers to one side. You need an answer to that. Or same thing with trips. And the way he was able to play his run gap and then still carry like a vertical of a wide receiver. And you can see that too, like just watching, but you just appreciate the responsibility so much more, because you know that that's film study. Like they're dedicated to their craft. I just think you have more of an appreciation for the great plays that happen, right? Especially when they are forced to use both the responsibilities and make the right decision. It's, you just,
That makes sense. It does. It makes total sense, because like a good counterpoint to that in terms of what you said about offense would be kind of a guy that I was thinking about today was Tevin Coleman when he was at Indiana. You know, you look at Tevin Coleman at Indiana, and the tricky part about evaluation is that, you know, I remember writing, Tevin Coleman's not a very good outside zone runner. I'm not sure why Atlanta picked him up, and Devonta Freeman would be a better outside zone runner for them at this stage of the game. It's going to take him a little while. And I remember people going, that's ridiculous. He played wide zone at Indiana. Like, why would you, you know, why would you say that? And, but then you look, and it plays exactly to your point, Betts, which is that if you look at his athletic ability on the merit of the production that he got, you know, a good example is like the Ohio State game. There were like maybe four or five runs that were worth a darn in that game, you know, against a defense that, you know, would have the athletes that he's going to face. And the decision making that he made on many of those runs was not fit for the scheme that he was running. It was basically, I'm faster, quicker, and if you give me some space, I'm going to take it to the house if it happens. If you break down and have, you don't cover the right gap, or you can't catch me, you know, if I get enough space. And that's what happened with him. And then he got to Atlanta, and it's like suddenly Kyle Shanahan's like in the middle of the season running more gap plays for him than anybody else, you know, because that's what his running style fit. So it's kind of tricky, because that's an example of where you got a player where, yeah, the athletic ability helps you say he can eventually translate. You know, he's got the athletic ability to translate, but at the same time, you know, in defense, you get a chance to see whether or not they have not only the athletic ability, but the diagnostic skills too. And I think, you know, some of that's true with Coleman in terms of seeing that, yeah, he didn't diagnose as well as he did, and maybe you won't see that, but it's a, but it was a nice little contrast, well, I guess, looking
at it. I think a lot of the times we look, like, I'm a huge Madden player, grew up playing franchise mode, right? And in Madden, you know, your guy gains 3 overall points every offseason or whatever, and, you know, development isn't always linear, like, right? Like, and some people want it more than others, and it's just so hard to, like, how can you project that he is going to be able to work with Kyle Shanahan, probably one of the best teachers in the NFL. And it's tough because
there's a lot of guesswork with
and
all
that's,
of that.
I guess I mean, probably one of the reasons I hate it, because scheme guys stay the same to their scheme for the most part, right? You kind of know what they're going to do. But with players like DJ Moore or whatever, Norv Turner's offense probably isn't the best offense for him, right? He needs to go to somewhere where, you know, he can run some jet sweeps or come out of the backfield and take on linebackers or whatever. And so that's probably one of the reasons that I don't devote much time to that, is because you have your guys and you want them to succeed, but there's nothing.
It's frustrating at the end, right?
Especially, I'm a huge Chad Kelly fan. I watched him tear up Alabama.
Me too. let's lament this. Go ahead.
I was actually watching him this offseason, and it's intuition. Like, I'm not sure if he actually knows what he's doing, but he's put in enough reps, and he just has the talent to be able to make plays that don't seem like they could be made. And it's just frustrating, because I know he can be an NFL quarterback. I know he can be an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, and what you mentioned is so key, and that's one of the things that I've been learning so much over the past 4 or 5 years, is it's the NFL spends so much time on can he memorize? Is he, is he these certain types of things? And it's all these hard skill kind of quantifiable factors, because again, they're scheme guys, the nice thing about scheme is it is quantifiable in terms of structure. You've got this very structured thing, but with scouting, it's not all that. You have to have that structure to understand what's going on, but there's a lot of gray area. So when you see someone like Chad Kelly and you go, he gets it, because there's no hesitation with him. When he knows it's open, it's there. When he knows where it's supposed to be, it's gone. And people don't understand how rare that is for a young player to have that. Mahomes has that, it was very apparent that those two players have that in droves. And it's and that's why it's such a shame when you look at where he's at right now. And hopefully it was something where, my thought, if I'm going to guess, he got high and he wound up on somebody's couch mumbling incoherently. And because it's legal in Denver, of course, they're not going to test him or anything, So, it's kind of there you go. And he was at a party, private party. So that's probably what happened with him. And he self-destructed. But it's that's the hard part about, I think, with scouting in general, is that there's this intuitive element, and it happens on a conceptual level that you want to see, and it becomes more performance oriented. And then there's this pragmatic end. Today, I wrote something about the Jalen Ramsey DeAndre Hopkins matchup and it was showing how Hopkins off of one of the first routes gets his arm under Ramsey's armpit, and he's kind of not necessarily, he might be pushing him, but it's hard to tell. You don't know whether he's pushing him, because on one hand you can look at him and he's pushing him and he's running up the field and he's just holding the arm out. Maybe he's just stiff arming and holding it out. And he's saying to Ramsey, if you want to run into it and fall down, go ahead. But I'm going to leave this thing out here and I'm going to keep it in a spot where it looks like your arm's over mine. So it's going to make it look to the official that you're the one in the wrong. And then meanwhile, Ramsey's having this fun little thing where he's acting like, Fred Sanford having a heart attack, running down the field, kind of jerking around like he's getting pushed. But if you think about that, you go, if you were really getting pushed, Jalen Ramsey, how come you're still stuck to him while you're doing the Fred Sanford act? You would have been on the ground or at least a foot or two behind him further than you were if you were really getting pushed. So both of them are showing out for the official. And the official is the official doesn't call it. So to me, that whole game within the game is so fascinating because, like, as we talk about politics, while it would disgust me in the political arena that all this gray area everybody works on and the financial big finance and all of that stuff, but in football, you know, as someone who's like, I'm evaluating talent or I'm looking at scheme or I'm looking at these different things, you're much more pragmatic about how do you get away with this stuff? You know, like, how do you know? And for what was so fascinating is to have a guy like Hopkins go basically say, or him and Ramsey on that one play, it's kind of like, we're going to show out for the official to see how he's going to call this game. And he basically decided you guys can be as physical as you almost want to be. And then they just got down after that. And by the end of the game, I mean, the touchdown that Hopkins catches, he literally threw a roundhouse to the head of Jalen Ramsey. I mean, literally knocked him sideways to get inside. And it's like, it was brilliant in the sense that it looked like a move to kind of counter. Once Ramsey put his hands up, he's like, oh, you put your hands up, I'm swinging, you know? And it's like, oops, without being so over the top. But you look at it, you go, yeah, he just basically pulled a Deacon Jones right here and head slapped him and went right inside. And it's like, there's as a fan, you're kind of disgusted depending on what side of the aisle you are. But as someone evaluating that or appreciating the game, you're like, this is like two brilliant players who are like gaming every play to their advantage.
Or like you said, I mean, scheme is awesome. I love scheme, but there's a reason like there's such an emphasis on scouting because players win games. I mean, Jalen Ramsey, I watched your video, like Jalen Ramsey was inside shade, right? And Hopkins just slapped him in the fucking head and, you know, scored the it was just like, players win games. And so as much as I, you know, love scheme and all that stuff, at the end of the day, it's who you have, right? And that is why we place such emphasis on, you know, scouting and getting these picks. Yes.
Because they bust schemes.
Kirk Cousins, I feel like some plays he's read the wrong read this year, but he's just throwing dimes, so there's nothing you can do. There's absolutely good luck.
And that's the and I think that's the thing is that it is so complicated. There's so many different things. Like you can have a player who does, if you put him in the right system, he does two or three things really well, better than anybody else. You put him somewhere else and he's going to fall flat on his face. But if you put him in this one scheme, he's great. And then other people will look at it and kind of misunderstand it and say, well, see, look at him. That's all you have to be. And you're like, do you understand how hard it is to be what he is? He's like one in a million, like, or one every 20 years type of player who got matched in the right spot. So speaking of players matched in the right spot, we started with, you know, with the air raid and we talked about Andy Reid. I know you love Patrick Mahomes. So, you know, let's end this with you just talking about what you're loving about Patrick Mahomes at this point of the season and what you hope to see more of.
I mean, I don't know if I could see anything much more. He's just been absolutely incredible. But it's the same thing you saw at Texas Tech. And I know a lot of people couldn't see. I was able to get the All-22 of college, which is like some black market where, you know, what do you have? I got this, like, whatever. And I was lucky enough to get my hands on it. And it was just, you got to see, he wasn't a gunslinger, right? He understood, you know, what his leverages were. And he had the talent to throw off any base, kind of do whatever he wanted. And so I do think the year of, you know, sitting helped him probably a ton. There's no way to like measure it or whatever. But I mean, he's just doing the same stuff he did at Texas Tech. I mean, Andy Reid is just letting him go in empty, which he did at Texas Tech, you know, 20, 30 times a game and say, all right, make the right choice. And he's making the right choice. It's just, it's incredible to see. Especially because I was so high on him.
Yes. Yes, you were. Yes, you were. And let me ask you this. So what would you project What in the thank God portion of this segment, what would you project if he wound up in a team like Cleveland or the Giants or, you know, a squad that ran a much more traditional, like the West Coast variants or, you know, or the Norv Turner kind of sunny. Oh, I can't even remember. Blasphemy. I can't remember the name of the coach he came from, the tree that he came from. But Norv Turner's system, that's the outgrowth of the former Charger, Sid Gilman's, you know, system. What would you think there? I mean, do you think if he had a year to like absorb it, do you think he would have performed well? Do you think it would have been a lot much bigger struggle?
I honestly do think that talent was, we say this word all the time, generational, but it really was. And even looking at these quarterbacks last year, like, I think Darnold is great. I wasn't as big of a fan of like Baker Mayfield or whatever. But just the intuition, I don't know how to like, you know, quantify this or whatever, but just the ability to make plays is, I mean, it's the best since, you know, Cam and Luck, to just be able to say like, I'm going to make this play. And like I said, scheme is great and being able to read defense and all this stuff. You have to be able to do that. But to make plays and be a playmaker, that is the rare thing. Like, and there's so many different ways to make plays, right? Like Jared Goff can, you know, reduce his shoulder in the pocket, move a couple inches, and he'll hit, you know, that 5-yard crossing route that turns into 20 because he outran the defender. And Mahomes is maybe going to, you know, run halfway across the field, throw it across his body and get the same result. So there's this, and it's what we prefer, right? Some people prefer that Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, I'm going to manipulate the defense and do this type of thing. And for me, that's tough because it's going to take you longer. Like Rosen looks great, but then he looks awful because that's his game. His game is to be smarter than you, you know, to be more precise than you. And that is a tougher game than say like Cam Newton, who can make any sideline throw and he's just going to put it on you and trust you to make that play on like, you know, a 82 mile an hour fastball. It's just like, so, and I think that gets lost too, because when we're projecting people and all that stuff, like we have our own preference satisfaction, right? And so that's another interesting part. What the scout, it's really, and there's only 32 teams. I wish there was more, you know, like we can get more guys opportunities, but
Maybe we need an age limit for coaches, just like we do senators, and we can, for like, in terms of like, an upper age limit, like once you hit 50, you know, it's like, and I'm about to hit 50 and I'm saying this, but once you hit 50, you know, you have to, it's time to go. Like, you know, it's, we need some new blood in here and we can get, you know, or we have a high school, you know, we have some owners who go, you know what, I'm only delving into the high school ranks. I'm going to pull some of these guys out and we're going to have some much more variability and diversity of scheme, you know, in what we do. Cause you're right. I mean, it's like with Mahomes, it is it's also the hard part about it is how do you make something that's general preference for different positions, and then at the same time be able to project well enough to be able to say, you know, it's like, it's why I had David Johnson like 9th or 11th on my rankings. It was like, I write it down and go, you know, if he lands in Arizona or lands in Indianapolis, he could be a Pro Bowl player immediately because they run gap and he's a good gap player, but he's going to take a little time to learn zone. And if he lands in a zone team, he might struggle a little bit longer doing that. Well, you know, I'm grading. I have to grade for all of the types of different run schemes there are. Yeah, he's going to be lower, you know, but I can still write. Yeah, I see he's a talent. I mean, like, I know it. He's just got to fit here. So is that going to happen? You know, I don't know. So it's like, it's the same thing with quarterbacks. So it's, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's endless. And this conversation could go on forever, I know. It's been a true pleasure. Betts, where can we find, you know, what's your handle on Twitter again, just to let everybody know?
Yeah, you
know,
can follow me at all22, spelled out phonetically. And just make sure you guys buy the RSP and not only just read the projections. One of my favorite things, Matt, is your player notes on each individual play. A lot of my stuff actually comes from like how detailed that was. And like, I don't know how many people actually go into, you know, page 1082 or whatever it is and read those, but it's great stuff. I love seeing your thoughts on that stuff. So, and that's actually influenced a lot of my stuff. So make sure you guys go out and read that part.
Wow.
I'm sure it gets glossed over, but that's the important part right there.
I appreciate that, and that's fine. You might be disappointed because my eyes are beginning to fail me, and I'm beginning to change how I do that. I'm not going play by play anymore. I'm just writing notes based on what I just general notes in the thing, as opposed to play by play stuff like I've done for the past 14 years. But I don't have time anymore to do it. But I'm so glad to hear that.
I'm probably just the only person, but you didn't even. Spell check. Yeah.
Bother to spell it right. I don't even care. It's just raw notes.
But yeah, that's one of my favorite parts. I love buying RSP every year and just, you know, glossing over that part because there's always something to learn from somebody, right?
Man, well, I appreciate that because knowing, just listening to you discuss with the wealth of knowledge you've attained, really just reaching out to people and doing the work on your own. Is, you know, it's just fantastic to hear. I've learned some things today that have been great that I'm going to go back and listen to this show. So yeah, everyone, please follow Betts. And yeah, I'll make the plea here, or the appeal. I won't make it as much of a plea, but you know, get the RSP, check out the site, check out the YouTube channel and subscribe to that. Those things are free. You can subscribe to this podcast, but the RSP publication comes out every year. There's two publications, a pre-draft and a post-draft. The pre-draft comes out every year at April 1. I'm not making any jokes about that. There's a special meaning behind that. And then 1 week after the draft, I put out a post-draft update for fantasy people to give them more of an idea of fit and things like that that might be helpful for the first year, maybe year or two down the line. So, you know, people love it, and 10% goes to a great cause, Darkness to Light. You can look it up and see all the things that they do that is very helpful to communities all around the country. So, Betts, thank you so much for joining me and everyone listening. You guys have a good week, and we'll see you next time.